Right now, many churches are planning their budgets for the next fiscal year. Your church can support the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. by joining the Issues Etc. 300. We're looking for 300 congregations to include $1,000 in their mission or advertising budgets. Find out more about the Issues Etc. 300 on the support page of our website, issuesetc.org. Don't miss your congregation's budget deadline. Download the flyer and present it to your congregation today. Welcome back to Issues Etc. For the remainder of this hour, on this Wednesday afternoon, June the 2nd, we're going to be talking with Robert Riley about Islam's intellectual suicide, going through some history of Islam. I invite your questions and your comments for the next 45 minutes. 1-877-623-MY-IE, 877-623-6943. You can email us right here in the studio in real time, talkback@issuesetc.org, talkback@issuesetc.org. You can Twitter us at @issuesetc, or on this subject, leave a question or a comment at our Facebook fan page, facebook.com/issuesetc. We're going to be giving away a copy of Robert Riley's book, The Closing of the Muslim Mind, to the best question or comment during the next 45 minutes. Robert Riley is senior fellow at the American Foreign Policy Council. He formerly served in the White House and the Office of the Secretary of Defense, and his new book is called The Closing of the Muslim Mind, How Intellectual Suicide Created the Modern Islamist Crisis. Bob, welcome to Issues Etc.
Thank you so much. It's great to be with you.
You say near the end of your book that at the end of this long road for Islam, the reason that men like Osama bin Laden feel that they must destroy Western modernity is because they have come to the conclusion that they cannot retain their faith and enter the modern world. What do you mean by that?
Well, there are a couple of reasons for that. One is a very obvious one, that the West is seen as materialistic, atheistic, spiritually dead, sex-obsessed, etc. And not just Osama bin Laden, but many Muslims generally are revulsed by this, as are many Americans. And unfortunately, that's the part of us that is seen most because of the proliferation of satellite TV stations and so forth. So the side of America that gets on its knees every day and every night is the unknown part as far as a great deal of the Muslim world is concerned. The thing that offends them most is lack of belief. Not that you're a Christian or a Jew, but that you're an unbeliever. So that's an incitement. But more specifically, directed toward the topic of the book, is the fact that democracy itself, even if exercised by a people that has retained its moral virtue, is an offense to them because, according to their interpretation of Islam, we live solely by God's laws, and there is no legitimate sphere for reason to operate in coming to agreements on how we're going to live together. Therefore, for instance, during the parliamentary elections in Great Britain, the Islamist websites will send out warnings, do not vote in the elections, it's an act of shirk, which is an act of blasphemy in Islam, of finding something else comparable to God. So you're stacking up man's laws against God's laws, and this is a terrible offense in this understanding of Islam. So democracy itself is seen by them as a terrible, terrible threat, and that it would destroy their religion. In that understanding, I'm talking about in Osama bin Laden's understanding of it.
Was this always the case before the closing of the Muslim mind? Was there an opening of the Muslim mind somewhere
there
back
was
in
an
history?
Yeah, Todd, that's the unknown story that part of my book talks about. And that was when the Arabs conquered a great deal of the Christian world, which was the Byzantine Empire at that time, and they also conquered the Persian Empire. And in both those empires, there were centers of Greek learning and philosophy. And also, as you know, Christian apologetics had been pretty well developed by the 7th century, and it had been influenced by philosophy as well, and natural theology and the arguments for God's existence and so forth. So the Muslims encountered this in the lands it conquered, and it was its first encounter with philosophy. And they began to wonder, is this compatible with our religion? Is this compatible with whom we think God is? Can we use reason to arrive at moral, the nature of morality? What's the relationship between reason and our scripture, or is there any? And this, these questions were considered under the Abbasid caliphates and came to be broadly accepted and highly influential. And this is the period when the first Arab philosopher, al-Arabi, arose, and the caliph al-Ma'mun officially embraced this primacy of reason in Islamic thinking. He's the one who created the great house of wisdom called the Bat al-Hikmah in Baghdad, which began the great translation works of Greek philosophy and science into Arabic. And unfortunately, this only lasted for three consecutive caliphs, and then there was a huge reaction against it, and this primacy of reason was lost.
What brought that reaction? I mean, with the flourishing of, albeit borrowed, knowledge from the Hellenistic world, and then as later built upon by Christian culture, what brought about the reaction?
The traditional Islam found this suspect to begin with, and a theological school arose in specific opposition to this rational theology, which was conducted by a group called the Mu'tazilites. And they, here's what the struggle was over. They had two very distinct ideas of who God is, and they each drew upon the Quran to support their interpretation. And the Mu'tazilites said that God is primarily justice and rationality. And therefore, God has given man reason to come to understand his creation, and through his creation to come to understand God himself. And that God has given every man the ability to discern the goodness and badness, justice and injustice of acts and things. And he has endowed man with freedom because he would be unjust should he punish man for doing something that he wasn't free to do or not do. This all sounds familiar to us because Christianity, indeed, was influenced by some of the same philosophical sources that had this influence on Islam back in the 8th and 9th centuries. Now, the opponents denied all of this and said God is not rationality and there is no conception of justice to which he is subject. He is pure power and omnipotence and will. And he does what he wills, and he's constrained by nothing, certainly not by reason. And that reality itself is incomprehensible in the sense that it consists of these time-space atoms that God agglomerates in a particular way just for the instant. And it's up to him if he wants to keep it going the next instant, or to change the thing into something else. But the thing itself has no nature. That is, there's no such thing as the nature of a tree, or of a man, or of a dog. And you cannot say, as the Mu'tazilites would, that an acorn, in its trajectory of growth to become an oak, will nowhere along the path of that trajectory become a man, or a fish, because it has the nature of an oak tree. And the Asherites specifically denied this and said, no, it can become anything God wants it to be in the next instant. And there is no such thing as nature. In other words, there's no intervening secondary causes between God's will and the existence of a thing. There's no such thing as gravity. There are no natural laws. Everything is done directly by God without any intermediary causes.
And would they have asserted along with it, which seems to be so part and parcel of Islam today, at least if not spoken explicitly, it seems to be implicit in much of what radical Islam thinks. Would they have asserted that this God, who is not rationality, is in fact essentially arbitrary?
Exactly. And there is no gainsaying what he can do, nor can you judge, come to any judgment as to the justice and injustice of what he does. They, the Asherites, who won, unfortunately, said, God does not forbid murder because it's bad. It's bad because he forbids it. And he could change his strictures on this tomorrow and say, you now must engage in ritual murder, and it would be good, and there would be no gainsaying him. So there is no real structure or nature in the universe. All you can know is God's revelation, and what you must do, therefore, is adhere very closely to the word of what he said, and even the way in which you can use your reason and logic to understand what he said is severely circumscribed. So this is a kind of the result of what I call a deformed theology. And the consequences of it, as it seeped through the Sunni Islam world, I'm speaking specifically of Sunni Islam, which of course is the vast majority of Muslims, this Asherite theology became the majority school. So within it, you have the denial of cause and effect in the natural world, which makes the world incomprehensible because there's no narrative of cause and effect tying things together.
Let's take a break right there. When we come back, I want to pick up right where we're leaving off with Bob Riley. He's senior fellow at the American Foreign Policy Council. He formerly served in the White House and the Office of the Secretary of Defense. He's author of the book, The Closing of the Muslim Mind, How Intellectual Suicide Created the Modern Islamist Crisis. If you're a talk radio junkie like me, you might assume that the programming is free. Commercial advertisers pay for the production costs and staff salaries. Well, that's true for most radio talk shows, but not for Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is listener-supported. We rely on you to pay for the production, salary, and airtime costs for this worldwide outreach. Hi, this is Todd Wilkin, asking you to consider making a tax-deductible gift to Issues Etc. today. You can donate online, issuesetc.org, or you can donate by check. Make your check payable to Lutheran Public Radio. The address? LPR, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. LPR, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Remember, unlike other talk radio shows, Issues Etc. needs your financial support. We depend on you for the continuation and expansion of Issues Etc. Thanks for your consideration.
Smartest listeners in radio, you're listening to Issues Etc.
Fathers, the forgotten victims of abortion.
This is a special commentary from the Susan B. Anthony List, named for the suffragette who was proudly pro-life.
Abortion has many victims, and one not often considered is the father of the unborn baby. As we celebrate and honor fathers on Father's Day this month, it's important to remember that current laws do not allow a father to stop the abortion of his own child. Fathers can find themselves in a no-win situation. Those who attempt to defend their unborn child can be portrayed as meddling and robbing a woman of her rights. Those who leave the decision to the mother with little or no input are called uncaring and irresponsible. More on this next time.
Are you pro-life? Then visit our website at sba-list.org and discover how you can make a difference. I'm Marjorie Dannenfelser, president of the Susan B. Anthony List. Thanks for taking a stand.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking about Islam's intellectual suicide and its consequences. Bob Riley is our guest, senior fellow at the American Foreign Policy Council, formerly served in the White House and the Office of the Secretary of Defense. His new book, The Closing of the Muslim Mind, How Intellectual Suicide Created the Modern Islamist Crisis. The listener with the best question or comment live this Wednesday afternoon, June the 2nd, will receive The Closing of the Muslim Mind. Our Facebook fan page, facebook.com/issuesETC. Leave a question or a comment there. You can Twitter us at issuesETC. Send us an email right here in the studio in real time. Talk back at issuesETC.org or give us a call 1-877-623-6943. Bob, pick up where you left off. You were talking about what the triumph of this school of thought in Islam denied. You said it denied cause and effect. It presents a God as essentially not rational in any sense and completely arbitrary. What else was denied there?
Well, you therefore come to an understanding of reality as just a succession of miracles. And because of that, the world itself becomes incomprehensible, because how do you, if every instant is a miracle, how are you supposed to understand it? How are you supposed to account for what's happening or how things happen? You can't, or as one fellow quipped, all nature is miraculous and all miracles are natural. You lose the distinction between events and miracles, as a matter of fact. Some of the consequences of this are very profound, as after a great outburst of learning within the Muslim world in the period I was talking about in the 8th and 9th centuries, this is the golden age of Islam. This is when the court of Baghdad was probably the most resplendent in the world. It went into a long decline, and one symptom was its loss of science. If you deny that the laws of nature exist, the effort to come to know those laws is obviously undermined if, for theological reasons, you're told not to believe that they do exist. And there's another impact from the denigration of reason as being unable to understand reality or to come to understand the morality of things. This led to a very legalistic form of religion in which you had to constantly refer to text to see whether what you were doing was right or wrong, or get the ruling of a qadi, a jurist, an Islamic judge, to tell you whether what you were going to do was permitted or forbidden. And the principle operating in Islamic jurisprudence is stated as follows. Reason is not a legislator. Reason is not a legislator. Therefore, you cannot use your reason to come to an understanding or come up with a law through your reason. It all has to be strictly from the Quran or the Hadith and so forth. So when you ask yourself the question, well, why didn't democracy indigenously develop within the Islamic world, you have a clue with this principle. If reason is not a legislator, well, then why have legislatures? It's illogical. And in fact, it didn't develop indigenously, nor in the Arab world does it exist to this day. Now, there's another thing that Christians who are unfamiliar with the Quran or with this particular kind of Islamic theology would be very surprised, maybe even shocked to learn. And that is in Genesis, the account is that man is made in the image and likeness of God. And, of course, the beautiful passage from the Book of Wisdom, for God formed man to be imperishable, the image of his own nature he made him. There, in the Quran, man is not made in the image and likeness of God, and to suggest that he is a profound blasphemy, forbidden. In Islam, God is a radically transcendent being who has no relationship with man. He is incomparable. There is nothing man can compare to God, and certainly not himself. And to say that I have the image of God within myself is, as I mentioned, a profound blasphemy. So God is not accessible in that way. nor does he reveal himself. He only reveals a set of laws which you are commanded to obey. The other interesting thing for a Christian is the discovery that within Islam and the Quran, there's no such thing as original sin. They have an account of Adam and Eve's disobedience, but their disobedience is just another of the many sins recounted in the Quran, which God, being all merciful, forgives. But it does not breach a relationship between man and God, that man hasn't the power then to repair, and so that then a Savior is promised, and we have what is become known as salvation history. There is no salvation history in Islam because there was no original sin in it. And because of this absent image of God in man, you can see how the dignity of the person doesn't have that foundation in their revelation. And I would contend that the development of constitutional democratic government has at its core the Judeo-Christian view of man as sacred because that image of God is in him, and that image is most particularly present in his reason and in his free will. And those are the things that are contested within the kind of Islam that this book is talking about, which came to predominate in Sunni Islam. So there are very, very profound problems and repercussions that have developed from this theology. My very quick one-sentence way of saying it is that Islamism is a spiritual pathology based on a deformed theology that has produced a dysfunctional culture.
Steve is listening in his car. Steve, thank you for waiting. Welcome to Issues, Etc.
Hey, thank you. A couple of questions. First off, from what you described, it sounds like Islam is incapable of a reformation in the sense of like we had with the Protestant Reformation of the 1600s. The other thing it sounds like from what you said is what's interesting is that if you compare the Christian's definition of God as who's revealed himself to the Islamic, they actually have a God who's less holy and less demanding of us as being perfect. And so in their world, they don't need a sinner because the standards are much lower.
All right, thank you very much, Stephen. Thanks for listening in your car. Now let's deal with the first one, this notion of, as he talks about, the revelation of God.
Well, you mean the Reformation? Does Islam have a means of reforming it?
Is it possible?
The bad news is that what we call Islamism is the Reformation. It's already happened, but it happened in the wrong direction. There have been attempts, as there were in the late 19th century, and particularly during the first half of the 20th century, of a number of brilliant Muslim intellectuals who said, yes, there is a way we can make Islam compatible with modern science, with constitutional rule of law, political orders. And we can do that by reaching back into our past when we had great philosophers and theologians, when we did admit to the primacy of reason, or at least a parity between reason and revelation. We give authority, the authority that belongs to reason, and we can integrate our faith and reason in such a way that we can live in the modern world. That was tried, and unfortunately, each of those attempts failed. And over the past 50 years, the intellectual currents in the Muslim world have been moving in the opposite direction. And the people who are leading that consider themselves the Reformation of Islam. So it's very discouraging in that respect. Now, I myself know and have worked with some Muslim intellectual reformers, and they are people of tremendous intellect and courage. The problem is most of them are working in Europe or Canada or Australia or here because they've been driven out of their own countries, accused of apostasy, and threatened with death.
When we come back from this break, Our guest, Bob Riley, has written, in the place of reasonable explanations or of explanations subject to reason, conspiracy theories reign along with superstition, and the daily Islamic press is rife with them. Conspiracy theories are the intellectual currency of an irrational world. We're going to talk about how conspiracy theories tend to rule the thinking of Islamists today. We're talking about Islam's intellectual suicide. It's Wednesday afternoon, June the 2nd. Bob Riley is our guest. You can join us. We're giving away a copy of his new book, The Closing of the Muslim Mind, to the best question or comment this afternoon. 1-877-623-6943. 1-877-623-MYIE. Email us right here in the studio, talkback@issuesetc.org, Twitter us @issuesetc, or leave your question or comment on the intellectual suicide of Islam at our Facebook fan page, facebook.com/issuesetc, facebook.com/issuesetc. When we come back, we'll talk about Islam today and conspiracy theories. Stay tuned. Bob Riley is our guest. I'm Todd Wilkin.
To be an A student, but I'm trying to be, for maybe by being an A student, baby, I can win your love for me. Don't know much about history, don't know much biology.
We know that you want to build your family on the right foundation from the very start, the foundation of Jesus Christ. Concordia Publishing House offers more than 8,000 products for churches, schools, and homes, dedicated customer service, and an experienced staff to help you focus on what matters most. Click to connect at cph.org. Concordia Publishing House, listening, responding, providing for God's people. Concordia Publishing House, cph.org.
We've got nothing against bumper stickers, just bumper sticker theology, and we'd like to send you an Issues Etc. bumper sticker. You'll find the Issues Etc. logo, slogan, and website address. Simply send your request to Lutheran Public Radio, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Please include a self-addressed stamped envelope. Good theology doesn't fit on a bumper sticker, but you can tell people where to find good theology, the Issues Etc. bumper or window sticker.
Listen to what you want, when you want. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Thanks for sending us your email. Having produced Issues Etc. for more than 15 years, I can tell you that we've never received email response like this. Unfortunately, we simply can't reply to all of your email. So here's a way that I can almost guarantee a response to your question or comment. Call the Issues Etc. comment line, 618-223-8384. It's available for your questions or comments 24/7, 618-223-8384.
Here are two new ways to stay connected to Issues Etc., Facebook and Twitter. You'll find photos of in-studio guests at facebook.com/issuesetc, and you'll find a list of upcoming topics and guests on Twitter at issuesetc. Social networking for the thinking Christian, facebook.com/issuesetc, and on Twitter at issuesetc. Connect with fellow Issues Etc. junkies today, facebook.com/issuesetc, and on Twitter at issuesetc.
Welcome back. 10 more minutes with Bob Riley talking about Islam's intellectual suicide this Wednesday afternoon, June the 2nd. I'm sorry. Our call in number 1-877-623-MYIE. Email us talkback@issuesetc.org or Twitter us @issuesetc. You write that conspiracy theories are the intellectual currency of an irrational world applied to Islam, Islamists today. Give us an example, and why is it that these conspiracy theories rule the thinking of Islamists?
Well, because reason is no longer a criterion, and the world is an unaccountable place. So conspiracy, there is nothing too ridiculous to appear someplace in the Muslim press. It's an astonishing thing to read, and anyone who wants to can go to the Middle East Media Research Institute on the internet, and they have many translated texts and television programs with subtitles, and you can see it for yourself. So, well, they, you if for are some examples. Of course, it's very easy that the Jews are behind everything. The Jews rule the world. The Jews were responsible for 9/11. There are, believe it or not, a growing number of people in the Arab world who believe Muslims had nothing to do with 9/11, or that Arabs had nothing to do with 9/11, despite the fact that bin Laden himself comes out and admits that it was his act and takes responsibility for it and glories in it. This evidence is, their minds are impervious to this evidence. More believe that, no, that can't, it can't have been done, and we did not, an Arab did not do it. And as I mentioned, because this form of Islam accepts only one cause, the prime cause, everything has to be understood in light of that. So when Katrina hits the United States, that's to God's punishment of this imperialist, militaristic, materialist, you know, sex-obsessed nation. When the tsunami hits South Asia, it's because people were fornicating on the beach and they're being punished for it. So, you know, in contrast, within Christianity, you are allowed to consider other possible causes for why something happened to someone. This famous episode in John when the apostles asked Christ, "Rabbi, who hath sinned, this man or his parents, that he should be born blind?" And Christ answers, "Neither this man nor his parents sinned." In other words, he's blind for some other reason. It opens the door to the examination of natural causes and understanding why these things can happen. Here's another. In Pakistan for several years, they forbade the weather reports, because a weather prediction is forbidden knowledge. If God is incalculable, how can you calculate the weather? It's an act of presumption. I'll give you just another little vignette that reveals something. A Kurdish friend of mine went on the Hajj to Mecca with a very pious friend. And they were arguing about this kind of thing, whether God directly causes everything or whether there are natural laws in the world. And they, as they were going around the Kaaba, the pious friend touched the black stone. And it was cool to the touch, and he said to my Kurdish acquaintance, "Look, here is a miracle. Under this blazing hot Saudi sun, the stone is cool. This proves God's direct action." My more modern Kurdish friend said, "That's interesting," and he started going around the Kaaba, and he found a set of stairs going down, at the bottom of which was a refrigeration unit. So he grabbed his pious friend, walked him down the stairs, and said, "Look, this is why the black stone is cool." And the reaction of his friend was outrage. Outrage! Because it was a direct assault on his theology. It's the same reason you still find some people in Saudi Arabia who will refuse that man has been to the moon. Not because they're stupid, but because it's theologically unacceptable to them that man could do all that you could calculate the thrust and the direction and the drag and everything you would have to know for man to get there. That's forbidden knowledge. For man to be able to do that, there must be natural laws and secondary causes out there which he can come to understand and calculate. And that's the existence of which is explicitly denied by this majority form of Sunni Islam. So that's what makes the world a mysterious place and susceptible to any kind of lunatic explanation, and of course the most popular of which is the Jews. The Jews have done it.
Paul in Milwaukee emails us with this question. If your guest had the undivided attention of the president and the chairman of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee for 2 minutes, what would you say?
I think this person just won the book. That's a very good question. Oh, I think I'd ask them to pray with me. That's a very stunning question.
I mean, what would you say in 1 minute to the president or the chairman of Foreign Relations Committee about Islam that you think they need to know?
I would say this. I would say, Mr. President and Senator, you have to understand that the problem that you are facing in the Islamic world and that the problem within the Islamic world itself is primarily a theological problem, not an economic problem, a social problem, or a psychological problem. It's theological. Therefore, don't try to address it with just economic tools or political tools. It needs to be addressed at the level at which the problem exists, which is theological. And therefore, what needs to, the Muslims who are working on this to restore the status of reason in their world, those are the people who need to be helped. Those are the people whose voices need to be amplified so that they can have some spreading influence in that world. Unfortunately, bin Laden and the radical Muslims are getting the attention of everyone because their answer to the problems is so simple. You have strayed from the path of God. That's why your world has gone to hell. Return to the path of God, and the glory of Islam will be restored and will destroy the infidels. That's a lot easier to say and understand than it is to go into these theological and philosophical problems and say, no, it's not quite that easy. You have to restore reason and start thinking your way through these problems.
With only about a minute here, do you think that our leaders here in the West have a sufficient grasp of Islam, its history, and its current position vis-a-vis reason in order to implement these kinds of helps to those who would restore some rationality?
Absolutely not. No. And I think President Obama's speech at Cairo University a year ago was a clear demonstration that he does not want to face those very, very hard problems. That, in fact, in that speech, he decided to embrace the world of unreality in which the Arabs live, accept it, and try to change it from the inside by trying to change, you know, the use of some words. I don't think that's going to work. I don't think it has worked. And you know, the thing is, you're going to go around with policy solutions that aren't going to address the problem or work if you don't understand the nature of the problem to begin with.
Bob Riley, a senior fellow at the American Foreign Policy Council, formerly served in the White House and the Office of the Secretary of Defense. He's author of the book, The Closing of the Muslim Mind, How Intellectual Suicide Created the Modern Islamist Crisis. You can find out more about The Closing of the Muslim Mind under the Listen on Demand page of our website, issuesetc.org. Bob, thank you very much for being our guest.
Todd, thank you so much.
Paul from Milwaukee, if you'd send us an email, talkback@issuesetc.org, give us your mailing address, we'll send you The Closing of the Muslim Mind. Tomorrow on Issues Etc., we'll talk with film critic Robert Velarde about the moral and spiritual themes of Pixar films. He's got a new book on that subject. We'll talk with him tomorrow. Special thanks to Village Lutheran Church in Ladue, Missouri, their pastor, Kevin Golden. And they are also part of the Issues Etc. 300. As part of the Issues Etc. 300, what they're doing is pledging in their annual budget to support Issues Etc. to the tune of $1,000 or more. They put it either in their advertising or their mission budget. It fits in either one. You can find out more about all the congregations that are part of the Issues Etc. 300 by going to our website, issuesetc.org. Click Find a Church. You'll see the entire list up to date of the Issues Etc. 300 congregations. And I urge you to become part of the Issues Etc. 300. Urge your congregation to do so. Go to our website, issuesetc.org. Click support. You'll find there a one-page flyer. For many of your congregations, the deadline is looming, less than a month away. July 1st is usually the deadline for setting budgetary matters in a lot of congregations with that fiscal year that runs July to July. So with that deadline in mind, go to our website, issuesetc.org, click support, print off that flyer, and ask your congregation to join the Issues Etc. 300. Well, there's so much wrong with Islam in terms of its theology, but bereft of a right and healthy embrace of reason, it becomes not just theologically toxic, but toxic in every other way, culturally, politically, and becomes a danger not only to us, but also to itself. I'm Todd Wilkin. Talk with you again tomorrow. Thanks for listening to Issues Etc. We'll be right back.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Lutheran Public Radio, P.O. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.